Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of At Your Instep. My name is Morgan, and I'm joined here with Jordan and Dave, and we're going to go ahead and talk a few things about what's going on with us, Magic the Gathering, and Standard. Unfortunately, Mike could not make it on this episode of the podcast, but he does send his love to all of our listeners. On today's podcast, we're planning on obviously focusing on the Pro Tour, being that we have a Pro Tour competitor here in the house with us today. Now, we also might sound a little different because we're all actually in the same room again. This is kind of the format we want to use going forward, just to kind of maintain the quality of the cast. But we do want to talk about Cleveland. There was a Star City Games tournament there. We obviously want to talk about that. Two out of three people in the room currently did go to
that.
Listen, you were there in spirit.
No, I wasn't. Not even close.
So we'll definitely want to touch on that, being that it's our most credible source of standard lists before the Pro Tour. And then we're going to dive in and just, kind of pick Dave's brain here about the Pro Tour before he goes there and kind of give him a bit of a cram session so he can talk it out. And then we'll of course, have our question of the week. So we'll kind of dive into that as well as it does go, along with the Pro Tour. So first, let's take a look at Star City Games Cleveland. It was won, actually, by a green-white list, surprisingly enough. Now, both I and Dave went there, along with Mike, and we definitely had a good time, but we did not have necessarily as much success as the top eight did.
I didn't have a good time.
now, Dave, you obviously, this is going to Cleveland is huge for you, just due to the fact that, this is where you get to test something that you might be potentially playing at the Pro Tour. So what did you bring to Star City Games Cleveland?
So I played Esper Control. It was pretty similar to... they did a deck tech on the Star City of Worcester. It was like a Planeswalker... heavy Planeswalker variant that had main deck Ashiox. Mm-hmm. So I played a version of that. I changed up the sideboard a little bit. And, it's probably the most frustrating tournament I've ever played in.
Now, why was that? How did your round one go? How were you at round two? When round two started, what was your record?
I was 0-0-1.
Oh, okay.
So I drew...
The best.
I drew in round one against the blue-white deck.
Okay. And then what was your round two opponent?
Esper Control.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we're saying
surprisingly
how...
surprisingly enough.
So we're saying how Dave's day went. He played a lot of Esper Control, which is great preparation for the Pro Tour, playing the same deck over and over again at Infinitatum for the whole tournament. I actually didn't talk to you. Did you play against anything different than Esper Control? What else did you play against?
So the only non-blue-white/Esper deck I played against was a red-green kind of a Brad, like the Brad Nelson deck.
Right, the green-red mid-range deck, the green-red monsters.
Did you win?
Right. Yeah, I did win that one.
There you go. See? Esper Control is good against green-red monsters. You established that.
Right.
But what was your final record over that?
So I did not suffer defeat on the day.
Okay.
My final record was 2-0-4.
So
undefeated!
Undefeated, folks. That's right. Our own Dave Nolan. Undefeated at SCG Cleveland.
You won't read that in the headlines.
You won't see my deck list.
It won't be there, but
no.
It's there.
It's
for real.
Right, exactly. All these people like suffered losses, but you didn't win as much. That's your other problem. So we'll work on the winning next.
It was a frustrating day.
Most certainly. And obviously that's kind of tainted your idea of bringing this deck to the Pro Tour, because you don't want to be stuck in these mirrors. Obviously, it's a blue deck. People are going to be playing it. At the Pro Tour, you don't want to get locked into these mirrors and get stuck into like the draw bracket at the Pro Tour. That sounds horrible.
Right. Well, I mean, the Pro Tour, you do get 10 extra minutes, so
true.
The rounds are an hour instead of 50 minutes, so you do get that extra 10 minutes to try to finish the match. But I didn't really have anything too crazy for the mirror. I knew it would be there, but. I just had the pretty standard cards, like Thoughtseize and Negate.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So, I guess if I came up with some crazy Mirror Breaker, then I'd be willing to play it, but it wasn't a fun tournament, and I don't really want to do it at the Pro Tour.
Yeah. I can't really say that I had much of a fun tournament either. I went with the White Red Weenie list, the Ross Miriam special, if you will. And my first round was against probably the worst matchup for that list, which is the green-red mid-range list. I stole a game from him, but I ended up getting the match, and that was the start of my long winning streak. I went, I think, what, 3-4 on the day before we left the tournament. It was a 9-round tournament. We left before round 8 started because getting food sounded way better. So I went 3-4. I did have the potential to win out, but I don't know if that necessarily would happen with the list. It just didn't feel very strong against the actual opponents that were there. I didn't play against what I was expecting to see. I lost some games that I felt that I had good matchups against. Mainly, I lost the game 2 to Mono Red, which I feel that my deck is pretty strong against. But they had some reach in what's that guy called? Let me pull up that card. It's the...
What's it do?
It's the Fanatic Amalgus. Losing to that card just because of the reach that they had was pretty frustrating. Especially when you think that you're stabilized and they just play that card and get you down from 10 to 2 and then they just hit you in the air with a Chandra's Phoenix and you feel stupid. But it's definitely something that I think I just discovered that I don't think playing aggro is necessarily within my wheelhouse. I don't know if it's something that I necessarily want to focus on getting good at this point in time. Really playing something mid-range, playing something with more of a threat and more power behind it is something where I want to be at in most formats. So I think it's something I'm going to lean towards in the future and kind of put this red-white aggro deck away for the time being. So Jordan, how was work? No, just kidding.
Work was the best. I helped 3 people and watched Parks and Rec all day. So
that sounds amazing.
It was great.
So
the list that I really liked from the whole tournament was the mono green list out of the top 8.
Despite
how sad I am that you guys didn't do as well as you would have hoped, and Dave had probably the worst day of his career. No offense, buddy. Some cards that I really liked, the Boonsader. 3-mana 4/2 is pretty insane. It looks like it caught a couple people off guard throughout the day.
I honestly think that this was kind of Boonsader's tournament. I know that in the finals, which was Dan Musser, who's a well-known player from, I believe he's just south of Cleveland. Dan Musser was playing his Dome Junk list, which is actually very, very sweet. If you are looking for a mid-range list, definitely check out this junk list. I got to see it in person. It is definitely the real deal. The man is probably a little bit weird, but I was talking to people while we were there about it, and they said that it ran fine. One of his friends that was also playing the list said that they were discussing possible changes. Definitely take a look at ways of fixing the mana. One of those was just make a simple switch between moving a Caryatid over having one more Caryatid over an Elvish Mystic, which I think could potentially help out, obviously. But he was faced against a green-white deck that had Boonsaders in it, and in reading the actual match coverage, just... having the redundancy of something that lives after you kill it, and it being just a cheap Fish and Flash creature that can go on to something, really shows its versatility. I think the match ended with a Boonsader enchanting a Boonsader, so it's definitely, I think, a card that a lot of people may not have had their eye on yet, but now it was kind of full center. But the only other list that I really saw that I want to talk about was the junk list. I definitely say check that out. The top 8 really didn't have much of anything else too surprising, except for the fact that there was no blue. So that was definitely something huge that we probably should discuss here a little bit. So going from 8th to the top, the top 8 is 8th place was green-white aggro. 7th place was Dega Midranger, Black, White, Red Midrange. 6th was Mono Red Aggro, so that did come back. That was our champion from Worcester. Or Worcester? Yeah, Worcester.
It's Worcester.
Worcester, sorry.
That's how we say it in Boston.
I'm sorry.
Well, they don't speak real English.
I apologize. I apologize for my ignorance.
I said no. I'm just letting you know.
All right.
President Boston expert, awful English speaker, Dave Nolan in the room.
Anyway. That's a dialect. It happens. And then we have Black White Midrange that was actually piloted by Andrew Moore, who's also going to the Pro Tour and rooming with Dave Nolan. And then we have Mono Green Aggro to finish out 4th place, Naya Aggro in 3rd, Junk Midrange in 2nd, and then Green White Aggro again in 1st. So, guys, why do you think there was just no blue in this top eight? Like, what happened? I mean, the earliest blue list that we actually have is the 13th, which is Columbus' own John Meidinger. So, what happened? Connoisseur of fine hats, might I add. Sorry.
The thing that I was thinking about this on Saturday while I was at my job, my awful job, is that I don't know what you guys think, but I don't know if I'm willing to call Star City Opens a fair barometer of a national meta. And, like, I don't think they're supposed to be, but, you know, you see on Reddit or you see on Salvation, like, people are like, no control decks in top eight of SCG Cleveland, is control viable? And you're like, well, obviously it's viable, like, have a brain. And, like, that just because the deck doesn't top eight a 400-man event where literally anyone can play doesn't necessarily mean that it's not viable and doesn't necessarily accurately reflect a nationwide meta of what's strong and stuff. I don't know what you guys think about that, but...
No, I mean, I definitely would agree with that sentiment. I think that a lot of people probably were... I think a lot of the control decks were expecting fast red aggro, but I think what a lot showed up, as we can see, is slower green-based aggro. And I think that with that slight shift, that the I don't think the control decks necessarily could anticipate that change. Or maybe they just were... Well, it happens a lot of time, and what Mike has frequently said is that there's a lot of people that rush to control but don't know how to play it. So maybe a lot of control decks just got stuck in the Dave Nolan, bracket and ended up drawing.
I played against all of them.
Right, exactly. So obviously, like, you know, if you are drawing your first run in a tournament, it's very hard for you to struggle back into the top eight. So that could just be what happens. I think it's definitely an anomaly. I don't think it's something that we'll see going forward. There will definitely be people playing blue decks at Pro Tour Theros. I don't think we should worry about that. But it is a bit odd. And I think what's a bit disappointing is a lot of the new standard decks kind of just look like old standard decks. No one's really trying to push the format. And I really hope, you know, that's something that can happen in Pro Tour. I really hope someone pushes it and see where it goes. And I know a lot of people just want to play safe, but sometimes you just want to bring the heat. I want to see that. I want to see that heat. So from here, let's, you know, kind of dive in. Let's start target. Yeah, excuse me.
Targeting the Pro Tour. How about we start talking about the Pro Tour?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's start talking about the Pro Tour. Now, obviously, deciding on what deck to play, deciding, you know, what exactly you want to do when you get there can be a bit difficult. So, Dave, what really goes into deciding, you know, deck choice for the Pro Tour?
Yeah, Dave, tell us about your solidification of a deck so far.
Well, before the Star City Open last week in Worcester, I had been testing mainly blue-white, you know, kind of tap-out control, and Boros aggro. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of the two main decks I was working on. I'm really, to be honest, I'm not really much of a brewer. I'm kind of terrible at building decks myself. Mm-hmm. I usually like to take a deck list that I see or that is interesting to me and then kind of tweak it a little bit, maybe change up the sideboard. It's typically how I choose a deck. So, though I was testing before these opens, it was helpful for me seeing how the form is kind of shaping up now. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to look at all these lists that are out there. Basically, I'm just going to look for interactions that I like and maybe try to cobble together something. But at this point, I don't know what I'm playing.
Now, you use the verb cobble.
Yes.
Do you want to tell the story of what was happening literally 5 minutes before the show started recording?
So I was looking through your trade binder and pulling out every card that I thought was playable in Standard.
and I think we'll have to post a video in the show notes of all the cards of my binder that he pulled out. It's a good, like, 80 cards.
Maybe
100. Of course, yeah. It's just like, I might play that. I might, well, that's a card, I guess. Why?
Hey, trading posts, you know, right? I don't want to have to buy $20 trading posts at the Pro Tour,
you know? Yo, what world you live in, but there you go.
I mean, I think it's got to be probably huge. I mean, obviously, you don't have a big team. You don't have a huge company. that's backing you.
But he's at your instep, Morgan.
But I mean, that's why he's on here right now. He wants to get that little bit of a
at your instep bump,
the bump, if you will. Yes, so, you know, obviously, it's really relies on your friends to have cards that they can just lend you when you go overseas, and hopefully they won't get held at customs or think it's drugs. I don't know.
Including your whole place out of Shocklands. Yeah. No big deal.
Oh, my kid plays this game. I'm just going to hold these now. So, yeah, I think that's kind of something that probably doesn't get talked about a lot. Is like, you know, we always see the big names, the team SCG, the team Channel Fireball guys that go to Pro Tour, and they mail over briefcases full of cards. Who they don't even care at all about card availability. But I think for some of the smaller guys, it's definitely interesting to think, you know, how am I going to get all these cards? I'm not quite set on what I'm playing. I need to test more. I need to actually play these decks that I'm seeing in these open series and I'm seeing online. How do I get all these cards? And really, just relies on your network. And I think that's why, you know, having a really good community like we have here in Columbus is definitely huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this will be my third Pro Tour. And the previous two times, I knew exactly what deck I was going to play, so I had the deck together and anything that I might, you know, want to switch in the sideboard. But you know, it's not that many cards.
Yeah,
you know, right. Pretty much had it all together. But now, this time, I really have no idea what I want to play. I know it's probably not Esper or Blue White, but that's about it. So,
okay.
Definitely want to have options. Is pretty much what I'm trying to do. Kind of funny story from the last Pro Tour I went to, which was Amsterdam in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last extended Pro Tour, I believe. That was one that Paul Riesel ended up winning with White Weenie.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So before the tournament, the Channel Fireball deck was the Doran, kind of mid-range deck.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the vendors had Treefolk Carpenter. So that was a card that was in high demand, and you know, people were buying them for like $10. So,
and just for people that know, Treefolk Carpenter is just what, 0/3 for 1?
It's a 1-mana 0/3, search for a Treefolk and put it on top of your deck.
Oh man, so geez, it's like a tree folk vampire.
I was amazing. Yeah, probably not too many people had that in trade.
Probably not. I can't imagine that would be the case.
Now I have a question. So we don't know what deck we're playing. We fly out tomorrow, which we're recording this on a Sunday night, so Monday.
Yes.
Early in the morning. So we have 4 days to test for the Pro Tour.
Right.
What is your, besides drinking mono Guinness, as I have been told, what's the plan? Is it, Are we going to grind a lot of games while we're over there, or is this the, I'm trying to think of a funny way to say it, the last chariot ride through the Pro Tour before real life kicks in, or what are we thinking?
I'm definitely going to try out Dan Musser's list, and I'll probably actually just talk to him. He's staying in a hotel that's pretty close to where we're going to be, so, you know, I might just work with him, to be honest.
Okay.
I really like his deck. And he seems like he really knows what he's doing with the format. So that's probably where I'm going to start. But I'm also, like I said, I'm going to look at over the list, you know, see what decks I might like or that I could work on, maybe tweak.
Okay.
So we'll see. I mean, unfortunately, I don't have a collection on Magic Online that I can just grind games over and over with.
There you go, listeners. If you have a collection on Magic Online, you can go to Dave, what's your Magic handle?
That's DNolan08.
There you go, DNolan08.
Yeah.
Ship your collection.
There you go.
Thank you. He'll get it back to you, because if he doesn't, I'm killing him first, so it's fine.
So it's going to be all live testing. I'm going to try to do a lot of drafts. I can do that on MTGO, so that'll help. But yeah, Constructed's going to be interesting. I might just find a list and just copy it card for card. Who knows?
I mean, like, that's kind of the interesting thing, is obviously, you know, you have definitely a wide depth of people that you actually know going to the Pro Tour, not just from the Columbus area, but from your hometown of Boston. So that's kind of nice to have as well. So you have all these people that you know, and you can kind of, you know, talk with that you might not have seen in a while. That kind of broadens your testing situations while you're over there. So I think that'll also be pretty huge for you, that you have kind of two family bases that you can kind of leech off of a little bit. Well, not leech off, but kind of negative term that you can use
that you can use.
Holy I'm fuck. Using you only for your deck list. Just
yes,
know that going in.
No, we talked about live testing in Dublin, and this is just another question that comes up in my mind, because the procedure for that is interesting, because here in life in Columbus, we have a bunch of different friends who like a bunch of different decks, and when we, you know, typically go to your house to play, there's 7 or 8 decks for the 7 or 8 people that are different all across the board.
Right.
In Dublin, it's going to be you, Muster, and Mauro, pretty much. So, now granted, you know, Muster brings some friends, Mauro brings some friends, you bring some friends, you guys all kind of a community. But is live testing more difficult with just 3 people who all may be on the same junk list? Or is it just a matter of get some Sharpies and write on some cards and...
Well, I mean, if you have 3 people, it's fine because one person can draft online or something while the other 2 play.
But
it's definitely not as efficient as playing online, though. You know,
right.
If you can play on Moto, you can just, you know, jam 8 mans or whatever, and just, you know, even, you know, multi-queue if you want. And
right.
So you can just, you know, just get so many more games in. You don't have to do all the shuffling and all that.
That's a big deal, too. So is the plane ride for you going to be buy that online and then... By the internet and just mono draft the whole way?
I don't know how reliable the airplane internet is, but maybe.
Drafting whiskey.
You at least have to do 1 sky draft. I mean, that's the dream.
I'm sure, yeah.
There's like the Mile High Club, man. Like, what? It refers to drafting on Moto, right?
Yes.
What else would it be?
For our younger audience at home, yes, that's what it refers to.
That's exactly what it refers to.
Exactly what it refers to. Don't listen to anyone else if they tell you differently. They're
perverts.
Yeah.
But, so, okay, I mean, that's good. I'm just curious about how that's going to work out, especially from the perspective of not having a deck choice lined out. Now, do you think, quote-unquote, pros have a deck choice by this point?
I'm sure they have a really good idea.
Okay.
I'm sure, like, a lot of the teams. I know that the Star City team has been over there since last week.
Yeah, well, I think they flew out, like, Friday.
Okay. Yeah.
Friday before SCG Cleveland?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm sure they have a pretty good idea of what they want to play. I mean, it's probably just finalizing, you know, final cards or side of the slot.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that they have to have something prepared just because there's, like, with that team, there's just such a great conglomeration of both, you know, complete brewers and tuners. So, you know, the brewers come up with this kind of grand list, and then the tuners play it and change things. So it's kind of a nice thing. Like, not if you're a Magic player and you're a competitive Magic player, you don't always have to be, you know, someone that just builds these insane decks that no one's ever seen before. What a lot of people are is, you know, they see a list that they like, and they test it, and they tune it a bit. And I think Jerry T's actually pretty well known for being a better tuner than he is a brewer. So I think that definitely, like, because me, I'm like Dave, I can't, you know, I can't build decks for the life of me. I can't see interesting interactions and things like that, so it's just not something that I don't have the mind space for, basically. But I would definitely be, you know, over there, you know, picking up something mid-range and tune the hell out of it for the format. What cards do you expect to see there? That might be easy to pick up now at a reasonable price. That hasn't exploded. Like something that people might not think, but maybe something you'll likely see there that could be something that will impact the format. Can you think of anything like that, maybe?
So a card that hasn't broke out yet.
Yeah, you think that there's the potential out there to be a breakout card in this pros? I mean, I guess there's always the potential, but.
I think Purphoros, the Red God, is a card that I think had a lot of hype when it was first spoiled, and hasn't really done much in the Star City Opens that we've had, but it's definitely a powerful effect. It's definitely hard for control decks to deal with once it hits the board, and they pretty much have Defensive Sphere, and that's it. So I think that's a card that could break out. Definitely has the potential. It's definitely powerful enough.
Yeah, because I know that... that Mike was obviously playing a Boros mid-range list that had some interaction with both Purphoros and Young Pyromancer, and I think that felt very powerful with the things that you could do for it, as you know. So I think that could be something that we see going forward, or just some kind of interaction, maybe even like a black-red list that abuses you know, sacrifice effects and brings something back, like the time the what was it the
Murder King?
Yeah, the Murder King. Tyrant. I'm gonna say it wrong. I think it's Tyrant. We discussed that there is a list at the Empire Games tournament that was held recently, which abused for Ferocin. He's kind of been showing up. I definitely want that card to show up, but I don't know if the Pro Tour is the right room for him. But I definitely agree with Perforos. I think that in the opens, from the results that we've seen, we haven't really seen anyone use him to real profit. So being able to see a Pro Tour deck that has that kind of impact and that kind of reach with that card, I could see that. Most certainly. Do you think, Jordan, there's anything that you'd want to see if the Pro Tour kind of break out?
Well, it's funny, because when we did spoilers, and like I say, they're the worst thing ever to happen to mankind, but when we did that, and this is why, we said Ashiok, what does that card do? He's awful, and we're kind of seeing now, like, Esper Lister played him to good effect. My opponent at FNM this past Friday had the sickest combo, where he overloads Cyclonic Rift, bounces all my crap back to my hand, and then ultimated Ashiok, and that was sad. When it was an Elspeth, and a Jace, and an Aetherling where I tapped out like a loser. So, it was like, it was felt really, really bad, and I was like, man, I wish I could play Ashiok. But you see a couple of the Esper lists that play it. It's not a universal card across Esper from what I understand, but, I mean, Dave, did you play it this weekend?
I did. I had three main deck.
Did you?
And actually, it was kind of funny because I expected it to be pretty good in the control mirror.
Yeah, that's what I would think,
and
too.
As it turns out, it's actually not very good at all. I mean,
really?
It does present a card. You know, they do have to deal with it before it ultimates, but it is very slow. And blue-white has Detention Spheres, and Esper has Hero's Downfall in addition to Detention Spheres. So I never... True. I minus-10'd it exactly once, and I lost that game. I will say that it was very good against the red-green deck. So
you just get dudes, right? Like,
yeah, I was just putting his Ember Swallowers, and Bolas Crushers in play, Dragons, Stormbreath Dragons.
Fanatic, nice. Number four. I don't even play red.
Yeah. So it was good in that match, but I think it's at its best, I think, against mid-rangey type deck. So actually against this top eight from Star City, I think it'd actually be a really good card.
If we would have made it there, but instead we went 2-0-4.
Yeah, except for on one draw, it'll get you every time.
Yeah, that's like awkward. I did that at Origins, and it's just like the most boring rest of your day. It's like...
Yeah, but you did that with Jund, which it shouldn't happen necessarily.
Jund and Reanimator, man. The slowest player in the history of mankind.
Sucks.
Should I Farseek on turn two? I don't know. That could be bad.
I don't have anything else to do, but...
He could force a will that. Like,
but... I honestly would expect to see Whip with Varibos kind of show up. I really hope that card shows up.
I mean, everybody knows that card's insane, though.
I was like, everyone knows that card's insane. I mean,
they watched the SCG open this weekend, and that card's insane.
So you see that now, but I don't think it was something that necessarily was apparent to people. I think people were so focused on the gods and not necessarily weapons, but as we're seeing, the weapons are actually a lot more powerful than we think. I mean, I saw someone playing Bo. Someone played Bo Nightly against me, and playing an aggro deck, it was very good against me, because they could just gain 3 life every turn, and I didn't enjoy that very much. but I honestly think that Whip might be good use to some large effect, and that could see something jump, or even the hammer. I think there could be an aggro deck that kind of abuses the hammer and subpass it. Those are the 2 cards I'd say we keep an eye out for, and I hope show up at the very least.
Yeah, Hammer is an excellent card against control, because it's kind of like Kibler's Red Green deck from the World Magic Cup, where you just had so many haste creatures, and it just was so hard for control decks to deal with, because even if you swap the board, they're just going to come back and play another guy.
Oh, and if they draw a land, doesn't matter. It's another guy, actually. It's a 3-3, deal with it.
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of the insane thing, is like, even if they're not drawing guys, they can just make them. Like, they very rarely have dead draws now with this hammer out. So that might actually just be a better pick. I know that Owen Turnwall definitely showed up with the hammer, and then I think the winning list had a 1-up hammer as well. But he was on the Burning Earth plan. So I think the hammer is going to be huge to see. Now, something else that obviously we're focusing a lot on standard, but there is a second half to the Pro Tour. There is a limited portion that is very huge, and I think that it's definitely something to discuss. We have been trying to do our best to do as many Thera shots as possible. It's obviously hard to get 8 people, you know, in a room on a weekend, or excuse me, on a weekday or weeknight. But, you know, we've been doing these drafts and having a pretty good time at it. Now, has anyone in this room seen any sort of archetypes that have sort of evolved from the draft format that we've seen so far?
Well, I've probably done, 7 or 8 drafts or something?
Something like that.
Since the set came out, and the format's pretty sweet. It definitely takes some getting used to, because there's some cards that normally wouldn't be playable that are now, so a lot of these enchantments, like the Ordeals, I don't think would be very good, yeah. But when you mix in the heroic creatures, it makes those a lot better, because you just have more target effects, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as archetypes, I mean, I drafted the red-black Minotaur deck the other day, which was pretty sweet. I had 2 of the Minotaur Lord there. I don't know his name, but the 2/3, give all your other Minotaurs...
The black-red guy? Like, tough black-red?
No, just the double red. The double,
oh!
The red, red one, the 2/3 trample.
That deck was insane.
Yeah, I had 2 of those, and I did have the black-red guy, too.
And the fanatic of Mogus or whatever, is a Minotaur?
Also a Minotaur,
found out?
Yes.
And Dave, when he's looking at the card, he goes, oh shit, this is a Minotaur! he's just like debating playing it. And then,
yeah, I was just like, oh, this is a good card. Oh, it's a Minotaur.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Auto-include. Yeah.
Well, it's alright, because apparently that deck actually easily transitions into Standard, if you can remember. one of our friends may or may not have lost to the Standard Minotaur Tribal deck.
Well, you need to let me know who that was now.
I'm not gonna.
You can sign it.
I'm not gonna. I can't sign it.
I need
we'll
to
tell
know.
You after the
I
cast.
Need to know. Does his name start with a B?
We'll tell you after the cast. But it was funny.
Yeah,
it was a good story to hear, and we just couldn't believe who it was. So, obviously, do you think? What are the colors you want to be? I think red is the color you want to be if you want to be aggressive, right?
I think red's really good.
Yes, Morgan, red is a good aggressive color.
But,
and did you know blue is a good color for control? And black is good for removal.
Listen.
And green is good for big, scary monsters.
Listen, alright, so certain formats, different colors mean different things, alright? So in this format, though, I think you want to be aggressive, you want to be red. You want to have, a red-based deck.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the most aggressive draft archetypes, I think, in this format are going to be the Minotaur deck and also just the red-white heroic deck, where you just try to draft all these heroic guys and then multiple enchantments and or... what are those guys? The guys that you can play as auras.
The Bestow guys.
Bestow guys.
Yeah. It's probably the most awkward thing with the podcast. We're all like, what's the good mechanic?
Yeah. You should probably know that before you go to the
program. Yeah.
Just
saying. What do you think about Mono Black as an archetype? I saw that drafted a couple times in our pods, and I don't know if that's just our pods or if that's an actual thing, but when you get that guy that drains you, the black-black, for black color,
the Great Merchant of
Aspen. Yeah. The drains equal your devotion to black. That card seems insane.
Yeah, that guy, he's definitely one of the best black commons. That's a deck that personally I haven't drafted yet, but I've seen it in action. It is pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a strategy that I think you'll see a lot of that at the Pro Tour, to be honest. I think it's something that is well known.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, do you want to try to force Mono Black?
Right.
How many other people in your pod are going to be trying to do the same thing? Because if you're like one of the only, one or two people that's trying to do it, then great. But if you have half the pod trying to do Mono Black, it's not going to turn out.
You're all going to have awful decks.
I have, for most of the drafts that I've actually done, I've tried to force Black as much as possible. Mainly Black Blue. I really feel like those two color combinations are very, very well together. I've gotten the double Merchant of Asphodel, double Rescue from the Underworld deck. Feels real good. Feels real good to. I also had the Erebos' Emissary, so I got to discard my Hathonia, the cruel, so the mythic rare Gorgon that can wrath all non Gorgons if she goes monstrous, and been able to sacrifice a Merchant Asphodel, get Hathonia the cruel back, and the Merchant, and drain you for a bunch. I'm just saying, Mono Black is definitely a real thing, and Mono Black I think blue-black is probably where we're going to be. I don't think it's very viable to get a single-color deck that is going to be playable. Like, you're going to have to stretch for your last cards. But I think if you want to support color for black, I think blue is probably the correct one. Just with the sheer fact that you know, you can even draft the Phalanx guys, the return Phalanx, and turn that guy on if need be if you're playing against another slow deck. While if you're just drafting mono black or black X that isn't blue, you don't necessarily have the viability, but having a 3-3 on turn 2 really helps against the aggressive creature kind of curves that you can find in some of the red X decks. Now, where do you think that, you know, blue or green, I think that is probably even on our side right there. I've seen a lot of blue-green in the pods that we've had.
Yeah, blue-green's been pretty good. That's the deck that Andrew Marr actually forces every time, and he's had some pretty good success with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much just the blue flyers, and then you have the green guys to muck up the board. I'm really bad with card names, but there's a 3-3 for 4 that gains you life equal to your green devotion.
The Horizon Chimera, I believe.
That's the gain life every time you draw.
A green creature, he's just double green and 2. It's a 3-3. When it enters the battlefield.
Oh, just had Bullet Blood Nylia.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that guy's pretty nice in that deck because you're pretty much just going to race with flyers and you just want to muck up the board with guys like that.
Yeah.
It also makes great use out of Journey's End.
Mm-hmm.
And Griptide, which are two of the best blue commons.
Right.
Just tempo people out with that.
Yeah, I definitely think that do you think that this format is very much so based on temple?
I would say so. I mean, I've had the most success with blue red actually.
Uh-huh.
Which is just very tempo based. You just play a lot of bounce and burn spells and just get in there with your creatures, so it's pretty simple really, but I think there's still a lot more exploring to do in the limited format. I don't feel completely comfortable with it yet, but I have a pretty good idea of what I want to do and what, you know, people are going to be drafting. So, hopefully I'll be able to get some more in before actual Pro Tour starts.
Yeah. We have plenty of time left, so 4 days. In 4 days we're going to get a deck and we're going to get some practice in, so... Or you are. I mean, I'm not going to do it with you because it's $800 to fly over there. But,
right.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the hotel has Wi-Fi.
Oh, really hoping.
Oh, man.
I didn't check that, so...
what's the name of your hotel? We can do this live.
I'm sure that you will find internet if you try hard enough.
Yeah.
So, now... Let me take a look here and see... are there any cards that are commons and commons that you would take over? What are the uncommons and commons that I think you want to look out for in your packs when you're drafting?
Lightning Strike is probably the best red common. It's the best removal spell in the format.
Mm-hmm.
Just because dealing 3 damage is pretty much going to kill. It's going to kill mostly everything, and being only 2 mana is huge. A lot of the removal spells in the format are like 5. Like Lash of the Whip is 5, -4, and there's the red.
The sip of Hemlock is like 6.
Yeah, and then there's another red spell that deals 4, and it costs 5. It's a sorcery.
Rage of Purpose.
Yeah, so a lot of the removal spells are kind of expensive and slow.
Mm-hmm.
And Lightning Strike is one that's it's very cheap, and you can also go to the dome with it, which is really nice. Other than that, I mean, the Grey Merchant is probably one of the best black commons, other than the removal spells. I really like Journey's End is a card that I've had a lot of success with. Like I said, being a tempo format, it's really nice being able to just clear out blockers, and the Scry is relevant too. To describe one, but that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that there are any trap cards that you see people potentially, you know, picking and then going down a wrong path? Have you seen any of those in the draft yet?
Trying to think from my own experience here. I can't really think of anything off the top of my head.
A card that I didn't really like that I played was that 6 mana. We actually talked about this. I told David I thought it was really good, and he's like, yeah, it's not that good. And it turns out it wasn't. is a 6-mana, 5 colorless and a blue, draw 3, opponent mills 3. It's just kind of like, that's actually kind of bad. I probably would have rather played something else over that.
That's Thassa's Bounty.
Yeah. With the, just tapping out not affecting the board is pretty bad in this format, I think.
Right.
You know, unless you have like a really slow control deck. I mean, that's where you'd see that fit in. But most of the time, you're going to want to play something that affects the board or interacts in some way so you don't just get run over. I feel like the heroic deck is kind of a trap now that I think of it.
Mm-hmm.
I tried drafting that deck a couple times, and you know, looking at the deck, it looks really powerful.
Right.
I had one that had the double strike guy, that has heroic. You know, you get
plus
one.
Table hero.
Yeah, I had that and a couple of the flyers, the two, the 3-mana 2/2 flyers.
Yeah, with Seed Rider.
Yeah, and it looked good on paper. It just didn't play out.
Right.
And I think the reason for that is that when you're playing heroic, it kind of forces you to play these cards that you might not otherwise play.
Right. I mean, like, when you take a look, even like the heroic enablers look really powerful on paper. You know, like you have two guys plus one plus one first strike. That seems awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And like if I'm hitting both of heroic creatures and they hit potentially get huge or gets another buff or you know one of your creatures can't block, like it's fun. Or Dauntless Assault just kind of a complete block my two creatures.
Yeah, that
+2/+2.
That card is very good. But I'm kind of talking about more of like the enchantments, like the random like Dragon's Breath, which is it's you know it's okay. I'll usually play it if
you
I have it, but I'm not like
it's a 23rd card.
I'm not really like I just always end up playing one,
right.
But it's not really an exciting card.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of nice if you have the Cerberus, the 1/2 double trigger guy, but
certainly.
I mean, it's kind of cute more than anything. It's not usually just going to win you the game.
Yeah, I can definitely see. I think that you definitely have to have the right cards for it to just be that perfect heroic deck, because I feel like most every heroic creature just on paper, like, obviously is not where you want to be at. Like, if you just draw all your creatures and nothing to affect them, they're just going to have a really terrible, like, aggro deck. But if you draw all your creature enhancers, you know, your pump spells, your protection spells, your auras, and no creatures, and you're just going to have to mulligan. So I think that could be, like, the issue, is that with most every other deck, like, you can draw a decent amount of lands and spells to be fine, but you need further delineations of right combinations, which cause it to potentially be an issue.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you need, you know, X number of creatures.
Right.
And then you need X number of cards that target your own creatures.
Right.
And then you have to try to fit in removal somewhere in there. Possibly because you don't want just a deck with no removal. It's probably not going to work out well for you.
No.
So it's a tough balance. I mean, I'm not saying that it's unplayable, and I think that people can draft good heroic decks. I think that the double white 1/1 guy, when you target it, gives all your guys +1/+1.
Right.
That guy is insane.
Pretty good. Yeah.
So, I mean, if I see one of those, I will probably first pick it.
Yeah, go all in.
But, yeah, that's kind of a deck that... I don't know, maybe I just need more practice drafting. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, potentially. I mean, that could just be the case. One card that I see is one of the heroic enablers. It's Cutthroat Maneuver. Two dark creatures get +1/+1 in each game. Life gain, to end a turn. I think the card's kind of a trap. I don't think the card's necessarily where you want to be at. Mainly because it's a black, and, like, I don't see there being very much a huge heroic structure in black. So I think when that first card got initially pushed out and like doing like pre-release and stuff, people were like, oh, that card's so crazy, and I just don't think that's necessarily where you want to be. Now, a card that I think is still kind of underrated is the Disciple of Phoenix, which is the 2BB for 1/3, and when it enters the battlefield, target opponent reveals a number of cards equal to the devotion to black to you, and then you pick one of those cards and discard it. I really think that card is something that you need if you're going for the Black X archetype, because it's really powerful just to play that, have some number of devotion greater than the 2 that you already comes in with the card, and just being able to be like, that thing that's gonna, you know, that removal spell, just get it out of here. And it's a 1/3, and it's not necessarily great on the board, but it's 2 black, and it only furthers your devotion. And I think if you're going to go for some, I think that black actually does devotion the best, besides maybe red. But I really feel like Black Devotion, there's so many powerful things that are common and uncommon. This is another common that is devotion-based. I think that it is something that a lot of people might underrate, but I still think a very good card draft.
Yeah, Black definitely has the biggest bombs when it comes to the devotion cards.
Oh, yeah, most
certainly. The demon is just insane.
Right. I'm just trying to take a look at some cards here in the spoiler just to make sure that we're not missing anything here.
I think Miss Magma Jet is a good uncommon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Pretty, I mean, Magma Jet is definitely premium.
Magma Jet and Seer and Sphere, and then,
Lightning
Strike, whatever. Incinerate.
Mike's a big fan of going through all three every time. But, Red's definitely the best removal uncommon living, so.
Yeah, there is there's a lot of three toughness creatures in the format, so mm-hmm. Magma Jet doesn't always remove something.
True.
But Descry 2 is nice.
Big game.
Yeah, there's a lot of Descry 1 cards. Having that extra card to see actually does help out a lot.
Something that I have noticed is there are some creatures that have like a big butt, like an X5 or greater. Mm-hmm. I think they're really hard to deal with in this format. Like, you have to, like, especially, obviously, in red, nothing kills them right away in red, necessarily.
Right.
Black removal spells, well, one's rare, you have Hero's Downfall, and then you have Sip of Hemlock, but, I mean, like, I know that we're talking about, like, bombs here, but something like the 100-handed one, or, the
Nessie and Asp.
Nessie and Asp.
Okay,
or,
yeah, the 100-handed one is the sickest card. I had no idea that it could block 100 creatures.
Yeah, it's awesome.
it's
pretty legit.
It's pretty legit. I'm sitting by our buddy Elliot, and he's like, I think it was Morgan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it you? Okay. And he was just like, yeah, if you exalt this, monstrous this guy, you can block 100 dudes. And I was like, that makes so much sense. He's got 100 hands. Like, what happened? Is he like, so when you cast him, he's like a baby?
Okay.
And then he like grows up to have 100. This is my role on the show. I actually can't contribute.
So obviously, it says it's a Greek flavor. It does have some semblance of history. Like there is a creature in mythology that is a 100-handed one. It's the
So glad you said mythology and not history.
Yeah, mythology.
I was gonna be like, no,
mythology.
Not.
Jesus.
Yeah,
didn't have a real thing.
Wait, that didn't happen. So Jason the Argonauts is not a compelling history drama. You kidding me, right? But I think there's a lot of X5s that are just kind of hard to deal with in the format. I don't think they have a lot of removal for it. So I thought that was a kind of an interesting thing. Because I've like been across from like the table playing a red white deck, and they're just playing an X5 and be like, well, I can't kill that. I think it happened. I was actually doing a pre-release event on MTGO, doing a pre-release sealed.
God, and, you hate value, don't you?
Hey, I actually opened a Stormbreath Dragon, so I got lucky. Sold that guy for like 27 ticks online. It was awesome. Made my money back. He played the Shipbreaker Kraken. He played the guy, and I was playing a red-white deck, and I was like, I can't deal with this guy. Like, I just lost. Like, so I think that's something to watch out for. Like, there are big guys, and if the games go long, then you're probably going to have a idea of how to deal with those guys. And some of them might be things like Baleful Eidolon and Sedge Scorpion, which are the Death Touchers. Or even like Nihilus Bow, if you are lucky enough to open that card, because it's insane and limited.
It's very good and limited.
So, I think it's something compelling to kind of take a look at the format. And it's really interesting to take a look at draft formats, just because it's so, it's such in a vacuum of its own self. So it's kind of interesting to take a look at it like that. And I know being a cube designer, obviously when you create your own cube, you create your own form.
Sounds so illustrious.
I'm just saying.
Cube designer?
I've made a cube. Jordan hasn't made a cube.
Hey, I've printed off cards to make Drunk Cube. So,
congratulations. But, yeah, so.
It's interesting. This is really the first limited format that I've played a lot, or semi-all, I guess.
Right.
At this point, really in a while. I mean, I've just pretty much been cube drafting, so I didn't really draft a whole lot of Innistrad, even though I heard good things about that. Yeah, I did probably 5 drafts with that format.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I haven't really drafted too much with regular sets. It's mostly just cube, so trying to get back into it, and it's definitely an adjustment period for me.
Right. But, I mean, like, this is a good set to draft. Like, it's actually, I think it's fun. This is actually, normally I hate them, but I can't fucking stand it, because I'm really bad at it. But in all honesty, I've genuinely enjoyed all the drafting that I've done with the set, and it's something that I actually look forward to when it hits MTGO and just being able to pull it up. Be like, I'm just going to draft this set and have some fun.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was the thing you were saying at the last draft, I think we did last week. We were like, in Cube, you just kind of, your first pick, you just go all out on this thing, but not have to read signals? This is garbage.
Yeah, that's been the biggest thing for me, because usually when I cube, and cube is fun, you know, like, usually I'll have, like, an idea, like, oh, you know, tonight I'm going to draft mono-red, you know, and then I just go for it. And usually you can cobble together something, even if somebody else is in red next to you. But with this, you really need to pay attention to what is being passed, which might be common sense to anybody who drafts a lot, but for me it's just, you know, I used to draft a lot back when I still lived in the Boston area. The group out there, we did a draft every week, and now I haven't drafted in, you know, a lot in a couple of years, so it's definitely taken me, it's definitely an adjustment period to get back into that. So.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's definitely a lot about the Pro Tour. Obviously, we're hoping that both Dave and Andrew do well, and being hometown heroes, and we hope to see them on coverage, hopefully not losing. Hopefully, I think no matter what, I think you guys are going to have a good time. We're all going to be insanely jealous that you're in Ireland and we're not. So I think it's time to move on to a little bit of a question of the day. And this is something that was kind of brought up a few weeks ago by some pros. And, you know, well, the question is does having tournaments, large-scale tournaments, first game games, opens, you know, how does that affect actual creativity for the decks that we see on the Pro Tour? Now, Dave actually kind of brought up a good point about this earlier in our conversation. Kind of, he brought up his story about Pro Tour Amsterdam and the Doran deck kind of breaking out and then people suddenly scrambling to get pieces for this deck. I don't know if that necessarily has a large possibility of happening these days with, you know, two pretty large-scale tournaments kind of happening, kind of, you know, taking a look at the format as a whole. I mean, obviously, Jordan did mention this earlier, and, you know, can we actually take a look at well, actually, I'll just let Jordan talk about it. I don't want this to be the worst. So, Jordan, you mentioned that, you know, how the Star City Games tournaments might just be a snippet of the format rather than, you know, speaking nationally about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, or even in the sense of, like, the Pro Tour internationally, like, Twitter was all abuzz when people, when the dates for the release and then the Pro Tour were announced of, like, how far away it was from release, but, like, Mike made a good point before he had to leave that they complained last block about it being too close to release and that we didn't have enough time to test. We didn't have all the cards for so long, so decks sucked more than they could have. And they're really presenting this double face of, we want to be the first ones to play, but we want a long time to play really well. So, Morgan's playing with his kitten, and it's really distracting.
No, I'm sorry.
He's so cute.
He is adorable.
But, so I don't know how I feel about it. Like, as a guy that's not on the Pro Tour, I don't want to wait 3 weeks to be able to play in the tournament.
Yeah.
As a guy that has a friend on the Pro Tour, I'm glad that he has access to information. But then again, as, like, if Dave were, like, on Team SCG, you know, blue or white or whatever, and was, like, really mad about this, I could see that perspective. But, like, from my position and my role in the Magic community, I just don't know why it's such a big deal that I want to go play with my Magic cards.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think you can construct an argument, like, saying, like, you shouldn't get to play Magic because I'm better than you.
Right.
And I need to
keep
my secret.
Yeah, I don't know what the issue is, like, what the actual reasoning behind the pros' logic is. It's like, yeah, I want to wait, like... Then, you know, like, think, so how many people are at the Pro Tour Day of this year? Do you know a number?
It's around 400, I think.
400, okay.
Yeah.
So 400 people, 300 really don't have a chance at winning the thing, right?
You think that's
fair? Maybe a little less than that? 200?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably about right. I mean, not everybody's going to be a professional Magic player.
Right, some guys are going to win the PTQs with 80 people in it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so 300 out of 400 don't really have a chance of winning the Pro Tour. 300 of those people are going to take decks from SCG that they see from their state championships. And the kitten's eating Dave's book bag. Oh, Lord, it's so adorable.
Probably smells my cats.
And they're going to play these two decks. Well, if you're a pro and you just use that to spike the tournament. Like, you know what I mean? Like, look at Cleveland and go, oh, well, everybody's going to be on green-white. then bash out Green White. Like, I don't understand why it's such a big deal to these guys. I get it because they want to be the ones that came up with these decks.
Yeah.
And they like the namesake. And, like, I talk about all the time, like, SCG writers write articles about decks just to sell cards. And, like, I believe that. But, like, and they're missing out on that. But there's really no logical extension to the idea of being mad that there's two tournaments before the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it stems from people just wanting to be out there, be like, this is my deck and I made it, and I'm going to use it, bring it to the Pro Tour. And in theory, you know, if you have a deck that hasn't seen play and then suddenly someone top 8s it or top 16s it with a, you know, within a Star City Games and it gets put on the map, then it is going to probably hurt your chances somewhat of being able to catch people off guard. And I think that's a huge advantage in this kind of tournament, is being able to catch people off guard. And I think that that's kind of what the pros use to focus their anger at, is that I don't have this element of surprise anymore. I made this deck, and I've been testing and tuning it and getting prepared for the Pro Tour, and then some no one out in Cleveland, Ohio, just second places with it, and now my hopes are dashed.
Are you still Dan Musgrave? Yeah. No one.
Dan, like, hey Dan, you're a nobody. All right, at your instep says you're a nobody.
No, I'm just saying.
Well, not even at your instep. Morgan McCarroll, who lives in Dublin, Ohio.
I'm not saying that Dan's nobody, but maybe I'm just saying that someone who, you know, isn't part of these big teams, isn't part of, you know, Star City Games, isn't part of Channel Fireball, you know, isn't part of the TCG player group.
So Dave Nolan, Dan Musser.
But people who are competitive players, who can build decks, who are good and are going to the Pro Tour, but aren't as well known as, you know, as the PBs and the you know, LSBs and the Brian Kibblers in the world, they make their living off of this thing, and maybe not on the Pro Tour exactly, but, you know, definitely by playing Magic, a lot of the times they make a large sum of money from it. And by having the deck that you're going to play, you know, spoiled before the Pro Tour, definitely can be frustrating, I imagine. I mean, obviously, before we had this sort of tournament structure, before we had these, you know, weekly tournaments where we get spoiled by seeing, you know, constant play and constant metagame changes in Standard, at the very least, you know, I'm sure that the Pro Tour was probably very exciting for people because it was a large-scale tournament where, you know, people would bring their best decks and try to you know, break the format, you know, try to do things that people hadn't seen before. And I think it's kind of interesting that people even have, you know, these arguments, because most of the time, decks that you see at the Pro Tour don't necessarily translate to decks that continue through the Standard format. You know, Aristocrats might be something that we saw that did kind of still continue to exist after that. But I think about, like, Wolf Revant. Like, that deck, it's existed for some amount of time, but then just stopped, just because of, you know, metagame changes and things like that. So, I think that there's compelling arguments for and against, but you're not going to get people to stop playing Magic. Like, you're not going to get Star City Games to stop doing big tournaments. You're not going to get them to stop making money. It's frustrating, and I understand that, but you have access to this information too as a pro, and you can change and modify your deck better than most of the field that you're going to be playing against in the Pro Tour. So it's kind of weird to see them getting so upset. As a casual player, like as a non-competitive player, I say the only thing that probably is a little bit kind of disappointing is that you may not have an exciting of a Pro Tour. You may not see as many, like, format breakers that just blow your mind. But what do you think about it?
Yeah, I have a little bit of a different take. I mean, that's kind of like what I was going to say. That I think the people that were, you know, expressing their feelings about it on social media, what they're mostly upset was that it kind of takes away from the kind of epicness of the Pro Tour. You know,
right,
it's like,
exactly.
Oh, this is Pro Tour Theros, where we're going to debut the new Theros format 2 weeks, 3 weeks after the set comes out.
Right.
So it kind of takes a little bit away from that, but, you know, it's not really that big of a deal. I mean, honestly, if I was on a big team working on this, I would love that there has been two tournaments already.
Right.
Because now we have somewhat of an established metagame. I know what decks people are looking at. You know, everybody's going to be looking at these Star City lists. And it's like, okay, well, now I know what everybody else is thinking. Now, what can I do to next level them? You know what I mean? Like, oh, everybody's on green-white? Okay, well, what can I play that just bashes out green-white? So I think it actually works to these super teams' advantages that we've had couple tournaments to work with, and, you know, deck lists to work off of. So
right, like they know how to bust the format. Like they're format busters. You know, mm-hmm. they have all these great minds that have done this before. So
yeah. So I guess to that point, you say like these guys want the epicness of the Pro Tour to be a reality. So what is the fix for them? Because, you know, like last block they complained that the Pro Tour was too close to the release date, and like, is it release spoilers too soon, or is it just a fact of like you can give a Magic player $100 and he'd ask why it isn't 500?
Right. I mean, yeah. I think that could just be the case. I don't think there's anything wrong.
Well, Dave, you looked like a little like you weren't on board with that. What do you think?
I think it's fine the way it is, to be honest. I mean,
the current way, like this Pro Tour?
The way it is, okay. Yeah. I mean, the way they used to do it, actually, I don't know how many years ago this was, but at least a couple years, 2-3 years, where they would release the set, but it wouldn't actually be legal to play with until 3 weeks later, maybe something like that, 2-3 weeks later. So it gave people time to kind of get the cards, but there weren't any tournaments. Okay. You are legal with it until
I like that
time. Yeah, but they changed it, and I kind of agree with the change. You know, people want to play with the cards.
Right. Right.
Like, you can buy the set, but you can't play with it.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
How much does that even, like, that weirdly affects the, like, the marketplace, especially the secondary marketplace? Could you imagine if they released Theros, but it wasn't available to play until next week? Like, no, after next week? So we would, if we wanted to play standard tournaments, we would still have to play all of our old cards that while all these other people are brewing these lists and like, putting them out there into the world. So we know what cards are like going to drop off, but if they're still highly played, but are going to drop off in the next 4 weeks, like that's a huge like fuck you to the secondary market and like to the player that needs to buy those cards. I think that would be an interesting thing to see, but I think it's better that they're like, this is the release date, this is when you can play these cards, and then, you know, the Pro Tour will be 2 weeks later. It's not that bad. I mean, I still feel it's a fresh format. Like I said, I still feel like we're looking at a lot of decks that are just based off of archetypes that we used to have. I really think that there are a lot of new and exciting cards in Theros that can bring new decks. I really want to see those at the Pro Tour. And I really think that they can be there. So,
well, Dave, build a deck that beats the format and win the Pro Tour. Okay?
Yeah, just come on. Just be the format breaker. Just
you're
do
really
it.
Sad.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen anything yet with this format.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot left to be explored. And especially, watch for the Japanese.
Yeah.
Because they usually come out with just the craziest shit. Like, just out of nowhere. We're going to see, like, Bow of Nihilia control or something.
I mean,
I guarantee you.
That's the exciting thing. So, I mean, hopefully, you know, we see some exciting things. I don't think the pros really have this one right. I really think that, you know, the way that it is right now is actually really ideal. 2 weeks is nothing. You know, we have a whole other, you know, 2.5 months with these cards in this particular format for people to really explore. I don't think, you know, this is going to negatively affect the Pro Tour in any way. It might be a little bit less exciting, but I doubt that, you know, we'll care being at home and sharing other people that we want to see, you know, win and do well. So I think that's definitely a good note to end on. Dave, thanks so much for being on here before you leave tomorrow. We do hope that this does help you in some fashion. Hopefully that you get the at your end step bump and that you can just, you know, take out a Pro Tour really cash. You know, no big deal.
Yeah, can you do me a favor and tweet your updates? Because, like, you're going to be at 4 a.m. here when you're playing, so I don't want to text you.
Is it 4 a.m. here? I know it's 5 hours ahead.
Coverage starts at 4 a.m., so I'm guessing kind of. So, good luck on that jet lag.
Don't worry, it starts out with draft, so you guys aren't going to watch that anyway.
Right.
Nobody likes limited coverage, so.
No, it's really bad.
You guys can just tune in 3 hours later, hours later, whatever.
That's true.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, we'll catch you for standard. I don't know. I mean, we'll try to watch what we can watch.
I probably won't be on camera anytime, but.
You never know.
You gotta believe.
You're going to be on camera.
You're going to be on Sunday. On Championship Sunday.
They're going to call you. The Boston Destroyer, and then, like...
Nope, you can't call him that anymore. You cannot call him that.
Okay.
Somebody else took that name with a little...
That's terrible. It's terrible. We're not going to do that on this podcast.
Can we edit that out?
Yeah, we can probably edit that out. So, anyway, you're going to have a good time.
You suck the nickname so far.
I'm just sorry.
Dan Buster, the worthless player from Cleveland.
You know what?
Dave Nolan, the Boston Massacre.
I didn't say that. I said Destroyer. All right, listen.
Yeah, sorry. Michael Dean the Bomber. I just got it over with.
Now, what are you even doing?
Now, anybody that didn't know
Obama, if you're listening, I had nothing to do with that.
Everyone who's listening in the I'm sorry if I've offended you. Just anyone in the world. I'm very sorry. anyway, Dave, do well at the Pro Tour. We would really appreciate that. No, just kidding. Just have a good time. You're going to go to Ireland. Just have a good fucking time. Right. Honestly, just come back with some goddamn stories. If you could get Andrew Morrow in a bar fight of some persuasion, we could probably laugh about that.
Yeah, I think I can make that happen.
Yeah, I think we can make that happen. Don't kill him or anything like that. Bring him home safe. But a little scuffle. That's fine.
Run that last port by Keller.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
And again, listeners, thank you so much for listening to At Your End Step. We'll be back next week. And have a good one.